Welcome to Rhythm and Brews. We've got a special episode for you this week, a different episode, but I think it's going to be different in a really good way. I'm joined this week by one of my best friends and the only person I know who hates 90s music, I think, and that is Sean Dutton.
Hi. Yeah, as Tim said, I grew up in the 90s, but I definitely hated growing up in the 90s, except for the awesome cartoons. But as far as music goes, it was a lawless wasteland.
Yeah, so Sean and I have had an ongoing argument probably since we met each other years ago.
Yeah,
I love 90s music. Sean hates 90s music. So the episode, as I said, is going to be a bit different today. Rather than just have me interview Sean about the topic or just kind of go back and forth trading highlights, we're going to approach it almost like a debate, classic argument, rebuttal style. But instead of verbal arguments, we're going to use songs. So we'll get to that in a little bit. Basically, Sean's going to play a song that he thinks proves that 90s music sucks. And then I'm going to counter with a song I think proves 90s music is great. And we'll go back and forth a few rounds. And by the end of it all, it'll be up to you, the listener, to decide who made the stronger case. But before we get into that, we always start with BYOB, our BYOB segment. So Sean, tell us what you brought and why.
Originally, I was going to bring a sour ale of some sort because I hate it as much as I hate the 90s, but I felt that I shouldn't punish myself twice tonight, so I actually brought something from Wormtown, something I haven't had from them yet, is Bottle Rocket. It's actually really good.
Just like 90s music.
No, wrong.
Yeah, when you told me you were thinking of bringing a sour beer, I was like, I know how much you hate those, and why would you do it to yourself? Like, I get it for the sake of the joke, but
it just wasn't worth it in the end. Yeah. The 90s isn't worth it, period.
I don't mind sour beers personally, but I cannot drink that many of them in a row. It ends up being cloying, like when you eat too much sweet candy. For my BYOB, this is going to be, I'm going to preface this, the douchiest thing that you might ever hear me say.
Okay.
So this is a four pack of beers, all of which have 90 points or more on Beer Advocate. And so I'm calling this four pack the 90s. I've got Le Fin du Monde, so a Belgian triple. I've got Weinstephaner Hef, one of my favorite beers in the world.
This is a good one.
I've got Ballast Point Sculpin, an IPA, and then I've got Heady Topper, double IPA. Oh. Pretty obvious tie in there. I cannot resist a good bit of wordplay. So, yeah, there you have it, the 90s. All right, let's do this. So I'm going to let you go first. What is your first argument for why 90s music sucks?
You want to just cue up Green Jelly then?
Misadventures of Shitman is the
song? Oh, yes. I picked this song because I feel like every decade has like that one comedy band that like stands out. Like we have Lonely Island today. The 80s had Weird Al.
Where would you put Tenacious D on that?
I guess they might be the 90s.
2000s? No, they're later, yeah.
2000s.
At least when they really broke into the mainstream.
Yeah, they were a great band. But this is a terrible song, as you can clearly hear. We'll just let you listen to it.
It's a joke.
But oh, yeah. First, you got to. So, yeah, this is a song about a shit man that likes weird things, I guess. I don't really know. I didn't really like listen to them avidly in the 90s because obvious reasons, but yeah.
I think we get the gist of it.
Yeah, yeah. Please stop it. I don't want to listen anymore to it.
So does this like embody something in particular from the 90s that you hate, or you just hate this band and this song?
It's one of my not so fond memories in the 90s. Me and my friend growing up, Brian. I remember watching MTV videos like back in the day, and that came on like late at night one night, and it's like all claymation and stuff. It's they also had another song called Three Little Pigs, which just tells the story of the fairy tale, and it's really weird. Just a memory that I have from the 90s. It's not like a huge argument point for me. I wanted to start out nice and
yeah,
easy. I wanted to include it on the list because it's that ridiculous.
All right. I'm going to start with this song. It's called One Angry Dwarf. It's by Ben Folds. And Ben Folds 5, actually. And for me, this embodies something that I think is really strong in the 90s, and that is singer-songwriter style music. I think there was a lot of innovation done, a lot of, I guess, punk rock, for lack of a better word, influence into, or more, just more of a rock edge to a lot of the singer-songwriter music that came out in the 90s. Ben Folds, I think, is a great example of that in particular. But you could point to a bunch of other ones. You could point to any number of the one-hit wonder rock songs out there that may or not be on my argument list for later on in the episode. But also just wanted to put this on here because I love the song that Ben Folds.
I get what you're saying about that, but I feel like you could also kind of like point towards any decade and kind of see that. You can see that in the 80s, like with Queen, like they're the rock band of all rock bands.
Yeah, but that's, I wouldn't put that in the same like solo artist, singer-songwriter camp.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And Ben Folds 5 is a band.
I see
what
you're saying.
But it's...
It's mostly Ben
Folds. It's mostly Ben Folds,
I get what
you're
saying now.
And, I mean, let's see, Duncan Sheik. Alanis Morissette is another one that comes to mind. For me, it was a great period of that kind of solo artist, singer-songwriter music. It was less commercial, like, in a cool way. Like, less commercial music was breaking out more. I mean, I think you saw that a little bit in the 80s with rock, like a lot of the hair metal bands were just massive radio bands.
Yeah, Fox Seagulls. <everybody.
clears throat> Well, I was singing like Motley Crue and
yeah,
that type
Crue
of stuff.
Definitely, obviously.
And then, but in the 90s, there's a little bit more of a
rock vibe,
but also that this person was homeless and they got discovered on the street because they wrote an incredible song. And now they're a great solo artist. You're not convinced, though.
No, absolutely not. You won't be able to sway my opinion on the 90s. But right. Like what you said about like the rock vibe in the 90s, like that's probably like why we disagree. I'm a devout metalhead, and the 90s kind of like represents a time where like metal kind of disappeared for a while. Like Metallica came out with the Black Album, and then from there it was downhill.
That's a really interesting point because in a lot of ways, you could say that rock pulled pop into a heavier direction, and meanwhile, the mainstream pulled bands that were already heavy into a more commercial direction.
Exactly.
So if that's what you're passionate about, I could see it not being a period of music that excites you.
Which leads me to my next argument song. You want to pop on Limp Bizkit? Break stuff.
I don't, but I will.
My boy Fred Durst has some words to say. It's just one of those days where you don't wanna wake up. This is pretty much where I feel as though metal went during the 90s. It slowly turned into the rap core scene of Limp Bizkit, Disturbed, Korn.
New metal.
It's fucking depressing.
It is, yeah. I think that's about enough of that.
Yep.
it is. And there's a band that I'm going to play a song from in a bit that I mentioned on a recent episode. I think it's hard not to point a finger at them as one of the progenitors of the new metal music, but that's not their fault. You know what I mean? Like,
it's not their fault that they're new metal?
Well, I wouldn't say that they're new metal. I would say that they have influenced a lot of bands that are new metal because they had a very wide ranging sound.
Gotcha.
And some of their heavier songs tended to border on the butt rocky new metal sound, and then a lot just like, you know, this is something you see with music for forever. I think you have these periods of experimentation where there's a ton of music in the mainstream that is really experimental and exploring new things. There's a huge variety in the styles. It's usually when there's nothing, there's no huge trend happening at the moment. And then people start to see that movement as a movement or as a trend. So you think of grunge in the 90s, right? And then everybody wants to do that. And so you get away from this dynamic where you've got a bunch of bands under the same umbrella who are very different sounding. So a band like Nirvana or Soundgarden or Smashing Pumpkins, I think all those bands sound very different, but they're all under the you might say they're under the grunge umbrella. But from there you have people being like, oh hell yeah, I'm gonna do grunge, and it becomes this one homogenous sound that's kind of like the lowest common denominator of all of those elements.
The more trash there is.
You saw it, and you saw it with punk bands. You definitely saw that because there became like one really specific pop punk sound that hit its peak in the early to mid 2000s. It happened with a bunch of the indie pop rock stuff that came out. I think those bands were really indistinguishable for a while. So anyway, all of that to say, I think that leads into my next argument, which is that there's just a variety of sounds in 90s music that I don't feel like you have now. Like, I feel like the rock bands that are out there are lowest common denominator type of rock. And I think, let me just throw on this song and then I'll talk about what I mean. It's a song called Tristessa by Smashing Pumpkins. And like I said, people would think of them as a grunge band, but certainly they've got a bunch of other stuff going on too. But this is very jammy sounding. Wouldn't you say it's almost like jam rock more than it is grunge or heavy rock or nu metal in the way that you would normally think about it? And I think there's something about that in the 90s that I really like, and I think Third Eye Blind is another good example of a band.
Third Eye Blind is wonderful.
Sure, but
gem.
I just mean that they're doing something that their sound isn't like what anybody else is doing in pop rock. Like, I think Smashing Pumpkins is more different from Third Eye Blind or from Soundgarden and Stone Temple Pilots and all these other bands than, like, Foster the People is from Rogue Wave. You know, some of these new... some of the indie bands that are still around making music. And so there's something to me that's really exciting about the diversity of sounds that you get in the 90s, even within one large umbrella that kind of falls under the same label.
So I just don't get the diversity. There's just like a few like umbrellas, if you will, of music that I know of in the 90s. Like there's the rap rock, there's what you're talking about, grunge. Well, that's early 90s, really. Grunge kind of died out towards mid-late.
Yeah.
And then, like, there was the rock stuff and then, like, the punk stuff.
Yeah, but I think what I'm getting at is, even though you could say, you could point to specific genre pillars, I think there's a lot of diversity within those pillars. Like, I'm not going to go through the litany of examples again, but that... idea that these bands are categorized as grunge, but it's a much more diverse genre of music than you would say indie pop rock is now.
That's definitely true. Indie pop rock is, I want it to go away at this point in time. But at the same time, I think we're in a pretty good decade of music right now. I think metal's coming back. I'm going to keep going at that. I think pop is fine nowadays. Like
radio pop?
Yeah, radio pop. Like,
I don't think it's as good as it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, a couple of years ago was where it was like...
Top 40 hits were
starting to like teeter a little bit. But.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of exciting musical stuff going on now too. Like, I'm a huge R&B fan. There's a lot of really exciting R&B, especially... artists that are reinventing that genre. like you said, there's a lot of innovation in top 40 pop right now too. Like Lemonade by Beyonce is a weird album. Like it's not,
yeah,
it's not what you would expect from just like a huge pop star. So there's definitely a lot of cool stuff. I don't think that mainstream rock, I think mainstream rock is dead. I think that's a pretty hard
thing to deny at this point. Yeah, assessment.
Like really the only mainstream rock band I think you could point to are the Foo Fighters.
Third Eye Blind, so I'd count them
as
rock.
But they're not main. I wouldn't call them.
Yeah,
they're not on the they're not getting radio play.
Yeah, that's true.
A bunch of the bands from 90s and even 80s are still around and playing. It's just they're not relevant. And I would say, as much as I love Third Eye Blind, I wouldn't consider them relevant.
That is true. It's basically just Foo Fighters.
They're the only ones that I think that are still achieving
like,
mainstream
they're
success.
Like the crown. I'm sure there's got to be at least a few others, but I'm drawing a blank right now.
And that's a bummer to me, just mainly because I grew up on rock. So as much as you might dislike a lot of the rock from the 90s, it kind of is like the last era where it where mainstream rock even existed, and maybe you're like, that's why I hate it. Well, yeah, but that's the other thing. I love pop and I love rock, so I love pop rock, which was huge in the 90s, so it naturally speaks to me.
All right, well, if you like pop, I think I have a song for you if you want to listen.
I think I know which one you're going for here.
I'll let you guess.
It's got to be Oombop.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't know why you're flagging this as a bad song.
The 90s was the advent of the boy band. Well, I guess New Kids on the Block was late 80s, but they were like the cornerstone to what we saw in the 90s with NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, and these guys. I have respect for NSYNC.
Oh, my God, the fucking turntable spins.
Yeah, I have respect for NSYNC and Backstreet Boys.
More than Hanson?
Oh, yes, certainly. Because Justin Timberlake became a great musician, songwriter, I think.
I love Justin Timberlake, yeah.
He does some really good stuff. Can't say much else for the rest of NSYNC.
I know, but. Yeah. But that's the thing, too. Like, is this super cheesy pop? Absolutely.
Yeah.
At least they're musicians. Like, so people used to say that all the time, comparing them to NSYNC, but I don't know.
Their chorus is literally sounds.
Yeah, and I hated this song even more when I found out what an oombop is.
Well, I don't know what an oombop is.
It's cringeworthy. It's a period of time.
Oh.
So I'll see you there in an oombop. That's like the way they're using it in the song. And there's a lyric
right
that's about,
actually.
Oh, it makes me want to die.
Might bring that back.
Actually, I'd be on board with that.
Great back in an oombop.
Man, that song was massive. I feel like literally pretty much every girl we knew.
Oh yeah, people went crazy over that song.
I
listened to it first time. I was like, all right, I gotta see what's going on with this. And I was like, I was appalled. I couldn't even get through the song.
I don't think I don't think I could be a snob yet about music. I just was like, oh, that's a catchy tune. I mean, I was very sweet and innocent and a missionary kid, so like, I didn't have anybody telling me what was cool and what wasn't, and so if a song sounded good to my ears, I was on board with it.
Well, I think that's how you... Are you saying you're on board with Mbop?
I'm saying that it's undeniably a catchy song.
Yeah. I'll say it gets stuck in your head the same way, you know, Rick Astley would, Never Gonna Give You Up.
Yeah. But it's all about taste. Like, there's a ton of stuff that's, like, hugely popular that sucks.
Yeah.
But you can see why it's popular, and that's how I feel about Oombop. Like, again, I hate that song. I hate the fact that the lyrics are stupid nonsense, but I know exactly why that song is massive just from listening to it.
Definitely. It's not a very intelligent song, though.
No.
Which is...
Well, this next song, it's not really... intelligent necessarily from a lyrical standpoint, but I just love the song. It's Narcolepsy by Third Eye Blind. I'm specifically highlighting one of the like breakdown guitar riffs that they do because, and I guess this gets back to the whole death of rock conversation piece of it, but I just, you're not listening to music like this on the radio anymore where there's cool out there creative guitar work. There's a little bit more guitar and pop music now than there used to be because I think of the influence rock has had on pop. Like if you listen to a song like Cool for the Summer by, is it Demi Lovato? There's like distorted guitars used a lot. One Direction has a bunch of that stuff too. But it's not riffy. And not that riffs are always a good thing, but as a guitar player and somebody that just grew up on that riff-based guitar music, I definitely miss it. And I think it sounds cheesy now when you hear it in a lot of modern songs, so maybe it's just the nostalgia that carries it for me when I listen to a band from the 90s. But I think it's also the craftsmanship. I don't think anybody's, like, outside of metal, maybe, really putting that much effort into their guitar work these days.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to get any arguments from me about Third Eye Blind. They're one of my favorite bands. One of the only exceptions from the 90s, in my opinion. But definitely not mainstream guitar work going on, but I don't know. There's this band called Between Them Buried and Me. They're kind of like in the middle of like being underground and like mainstream, sort of. Kind of like the same place where Third Eye Blind is probably today. Maybe a little lower on the spectrum, but they have a lot of crazy guitar work in there that, it, I mean...
Yeah, they're
prog
they're straight
rock,
up,
I think, or prog
yeah,
metal.
Yeah, prog metal.
Prog metal.
So that makes sense. Like, they're outrageous musicians, all of them.
Just sucks that you have to, like, kind of look for that kind of, like, guitar work.
Yeah, and I get it. Like, the 80s, in a lot of ways, was an age of excess of that. Like, I don't need ripping face melting guitar solos in my radio rock, but give me something that's interesting from a musical standpoint. I think there's been a lot of innovation from a songwriting perspective, a lot of just a lot of evolving and improvement of the quality of the writing of pop songs. But I think that's primarily vocals and melody. I don't think there's...
You're talking nowadays?
Yeah, I don't think that there's anything really
See,
out there.
I agree with you to a certain extent, but I know most of the like mainstream pop songs and stuff have like 20 songwriters on them. That's not talent. That's just like an algorithm.
I will respectfully disagree with you only because most of... Not most. A ridiculous amount of the pop songs that you know from the past 20 years are written by the same guy. And I think he is a genius. And if there's anybody in the world I could trade places with, it would be Max Martin. He's written songs like, I think, Drive Me Crazy, Hit Me Baby One More Time, like just these monster pop hits from the 90s. But also a bunch of more recent songs like pretty much everything on Katy Perry's Teenage Dream, which I think is a great pop album. He wrote Since You've Been Gone by Kelly Clarkson, which is a banger. He wrote Cool for the Summer. So anyway, the dude is just an undeniably talented songwriter. He has to be I bet if you tallied up the sales of all the pop songs over the past 20 years, he'd be ahead of the other songwriters by a really wide margin.
I mean, yeah, but that begs the question as to why isn't he just playing these songs?
But I respect the shit out of that too, because I think I'm a pretty decent songwriter. I have zero desire to be in front of people and play my songs. I would much rather write for other people, and I think it allows for a lot more variety, because if you're writing a song for The Weeknd, and then you're writing a song for Demi Lovato, and then you're writing a song for Justin Timberlake, you're going to get a lot of, and then you're writing a song for Adele, you're just getting a lot of diversity in terms of what types of songs you get to write for, what types of voices you get to write for.
Yeah.
I really see the appeal of that.
I have to disagree. The appeal of the music for me is the band writes their own songs. Like Metallica, it's Lars and Hetfield writing most of the songs. Sometimes Kirk Hammett will pop in there for a quick solo. Freddie Mercury wrote most of the Queen songs. Those are the best. The best.
Yeah, but it's different things, right? Like when you listen to Queen, you're listening in a different way than you might listen to a top 40 pop song. So I think if Max Martin was writing Metallica's album and writing the guitar solos and then they were just playing them, that would be really lame. But if he's writing a pop song for Katy Perry to sing or Ariana Grande or whoever it is, and I'm like, yeah, give that to me. I don't want these. What it is a pairing. You have Ariana Grande, who's an incredible singer,
mm-hmm.
and Max Martin, who's a great songwriter, and you put that together and it creates a great radio hit. It doesn't have the depth that maybe a song written and performed by a more earnest artist might have, but it does what it's supposed to, which is get people dancing or give them something easy to listen to on the ride home from work.
That's fair. Is it my turn for a new song?
Yeah.
It's because you really like rock in the 90s. Let's throw some Christian rock on.
Oh.
Right? Creed, I think so.
Ah.
It was one of your favorites, right?
Well, you caught me off guard because I don't think of them as a Christian band.
Oh, really?
Well, because I was raised Christian and I listened to really Christian music. And maybe one of these days I have to do a Christian rock episode.
Probably.
Just to...
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, okay. So they're classically garbage song.
So when you say like 90s rock, this is the kind of stuff I think about. I mean, there's Third Eye Blind, but I don't even they're just Third Eye Blind. Like I wouldn't count them as rock.
I think they fit in really well in the 90s.
Yeah.
All right, that's enough for that. All right, I know what you mean. I think that's what, again, getting back to the homogenization of music, that voice became ubiquitous. Like every singer was trying to do that or some variation on it, especially late 90s, early 2000s, and you had your bands like, it was really the advent of butt rock.
That's really where I had the problem in the 90s is the late 90s. It was like,
yeah,
that was the
but
worst.
Notice I'm not putting like Fuel or Creed or any of these bands on my list because I hate that stuff too. And I think, but at the same time, I think the as shitty as Creed is, like just disastrous in retrospect. I think the worst of it was probably in the early 2000s when you had bands like Nickelback
Definitely.
Coming out and
but
Disturbed.
All that stuff was born in the 90s.
It was... It there were
the seeds were planted
the
in the
seeds
late 90s,
were planted in the 90s,
and
but
it was a tree in the early 2000s.
The seeds were planted in the 90s, but they did not bloom until the early 2000s. Is it? It's my turn, right?
I believe so.
All right.
Unless you want to listen to Creed again.
This is a song by a one-hit wonder band. I think you would call them that. Probably my favorite one-hit wonder song. Definitely from the 90s and maybe of all time. So it's New Radicals, You Get What You Give. I think there was a lot of great one-hit wonder pop songs, pop rock songs in the 90s. This being one of them. Absolutely Story of a Girl is cheesy, but it's a really catchy song. Then there's She's So High and Roll to Me and like a bunch of these other fun summer pop songs that I don't know. I think the caliber of the songs we got from one hit wonder artists in the 90s is higher than now or probably even the 80s.
Really don't think that's a meaningful statistic to make a decade shine. Like, oh, we had a bunch of one-hit wonders because they couldn't write another song.
Yeah, in some ways, I think it's a... well, that's fair. In some ways, I think it's a carryover of what I was saying earlier about rock influencing pop and just music generally being a bit more let loose from its commercial ties, and the fact that you could have a band like this that isn't really a pop band. This guy's voice is terrible, but they wrote some good songs and people were like, yeah, let's give them a chance. Like, the 90s was that in a way that I don't think other decades have been, and that just translates over into the one-hit wonders that you have. People were willing to take a chance on
finding the new sound.
On finding new sounds, yeah.
Unfortunately, it didn't happen.
Well, in this band's defense, so this isn't anything you can draw a line to with all the other one-hit wonder bands of the 90s, but this band broke up on their own terms. Like, they had just released like their huge songs and they had gone on like tour, and the lead singer just decided, this is horrible. I don't want to be on tour.
That's respectable.
I actually respect the shit out of him. And he didn't want to just be going to Hollywood parties and talking to record execs and like schmoozing with them. Like, he thought it's all bullshit.
Yeah.
And so he quit the band when they were at their most successful, and just became a songwriter. So another one of those behind the curtains guys. He won a Grammy for, you probably wouldn't remember it, but the Santana song with Michelle Branch.
Indeed, more than that.
The Game of Love, it was called. I mean, a lot of those Santana songs are indistinguishable. Guy. Yeah. I mean, it was a huge radio hit, but anyway.
Not a radio guy either. I'm a Spotify guy now. The advent of technology is amazing.
Yeah, it is. But I also don't want to eat up my data listening to Spotify in the car. But
fair enough.
Are we down to our final
ones? I'm on my last song, and I feel like this might be my biggest argument because they're still kicking today. They actually just marched on Washington not too long ago. They have like an army of fans known as Juggalos and Juggalettes. This is ICP, one of their very first songs, Carnival of Carnage. When I think of ICP, I think of everything that's wrong with the 90s. JNCO jeans, chain wallets. I think they're rap. I don't know what they are, to be honest.
I know very little about them. I think I can honestly say I've never heard their music before right now. What I do know about them is all gleaned from another podcast, The Top 5 of Death, that did an entire ICP episode because a couple of the hosts are big fans.
Oh, sorry, guys. I don't like them.
I think it's ironic, but I honestly can't even tell.
Yeah, but like, how long can you ride the ironic train, you know? Like, they're still going today with like the same kind
Alanis
of
Alanis Morissette's still riding it.
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
All the way to the bank.
This is pretty much the rest of the song, though.
Okay. It sounds terrible.
Yeah, it's just like 2 minutes of this beat with clowns laughing in the background.
Gross.
But yeah, I think that's what captures the 90s to me the most, because it brings up memories of all the poor fashion sense, all the bad, like, bad music that didn't work out. Like, well, I guess they sort of worked out. I don't know how that's possible, actually, but
yeah, and they're still huge to this day. One of the things they talked about on that Top 5 of Death episode was that the record for merchandise sales at the Worcester Palladium in Worcester, Massachusetts is held by them, and that they made like an insane amount of money.
It's probably because they have their own soda brand, Faygo.
I don't think they own that. I think they're just, they've popularized it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought they had parts and getting it published.
Maybe. They may now like own a stake in it, but I think it did exist before they... It's just like a thing that Juggalos drink. Faygo.
Juggalos.
All right. I'll play my final rebuttal. I'm a huge Oasis fan. This is Champagne Supernova, obviously. I love a bunch of their music, but this song to me embodies the huge rock anthems from the 90s. A bunch of them are Oasis songs, so you've got this and you've got Don't Look Back in Anger, but then you can also look to songs by the Foo Fighters, or you could even say Tonight Tonight by Smashing Pumpkins, which is not as much of a rock song, but just these huge recognizable monster hit rock songs, which again, we're not really seeing that outside of the Foo Fighters in our current period. So I don't know. Can you think of the last great anthem or hit by a rock band that was mainstream?
No, because we're oversaturated with pop.
Maybe something by early... This might be divisive. By early Coldplay in the early 2000s.
I wouldn't classify them as rock.
Yeah.
They were like their kind of own thing, which they suck now too.
Yeah.
They're just not as good as they used to be.
I really like a lot of early Coldplay stuff, but I agree with you that it's not as consistent anymore, and that the sound isn't as exciting. Anyway, I think you and I will never convince each other
Absolutely. That
the 90s sucks. What I will say is you've done a good job of enlightening me to a lot of things about the 90s that I don't usually think of or associate with the 90s. Like ICP, that's pretty rough. Limp Bizkit, Creed. I definitely think of Creed as being a 90s band. Like I think of it as a dark spot for the 90s, but I'm not regularly thinking of Oom-bop or Carnival of Carnage.
Yeah.
Or definitely not Misadventures of Shit Man by Green Jelly. So,
if you have time, like outside of this podcast, you should watch some of their music videos and maybe listen to that whole song by yourself sometime.
I don't know if I should.
You've enlightened me. Like, I always forget about Oasis. They're a band that I won't like turn off if they come on the radio, but I'm not gonna like actively like, oh, sure, I need to listen to an Oasis song. I think what it comes down to is like our tastes in music. Really, you're a rock and roll guy. I'm a metalhead.
All right. Well, I think we've covered it as much as we can. We'll leave it up to the listeners to decide if the 90s are great or they suck or they were okay.
Which I'm sure you already have an opinion about it.
Yeah, I'm sure. But what I want to do now, we always close with a drinking game. I'm calling this week's drinking game Like It's 1999. I'm going to play a series of songs for you.
Okay.
They're either from 1999 or 2000. And okay, you have to tell me, is it from 1999? Is it a 90s
Full
song?
Full disclosure, I'm not great at trivia. I don't understand the point of useless knowledge, but I'll try my best.
Well, that's why we structured it so that it's basically 50-50.
True.
You're just guessing. The idea here is that if you get the question right, I have to drink. And if you get it wrong, you have to drink.
All right.
Makes sense. Could set my watch by this. Like every time it's time for the drinking game, I'd need a new beer. So perfect timing. So for your first song, you got to tell me, is this 99 or 2000? You ready?
Yep.
May I have your attention, please?
2000.
May I have your attention, please?
You're right.
Will the real
Eminem didn't show up until then, I don't think.
That's not true, actually.
Oh, really? They have like a single,
he had one,
or something like that.
He had, what's the one right before this? It's going to drive me crazy that I can't think of the one that came out before that. But anyway, that's 2000. He did have one in 99. Let's do another one.
Yeah. tough one. I want to say 99.
It's 2000.
Fair enough, I'll drink.
Matchbox 20's bent. Okay.
I'm gonna go with 99 again.
You're right.
Nice bass beat. Two Eminem songs, huh?
Yep. This I thought I could maybe
album.
Trick you.
This is his first album.
Yeah.
I got the other one mixed up. Oh man, that could be either or. This is one of their older ones, so I'm gonna say 99.
You're right. That one is right on the cusp. I mean, everything in 99 is, I guess, but.
Somebody once told me the world is 2000s.
I'm 2000s. Pretty sure this is 99.
Really? Smash Mouth? That should have been on my list. Damn.
Let's confirm that, because I thought I had this playlist mapped out in a way that I could easily remember, but now I'm just.
Fucking pants.
What did you say, 2000?
I did, because I would assumed that I would have found Smash Mouth in my research and development.
Yeah, it is 99.
dang. Well, that would have been on my list, guys.
Another great, I played it for you.
Another great pop rock song from the 90s.
Fuck you.
This is the last one.
I'm going to go until I feel like it.
Okay. I think this is 2000s because I think they had an album before this album.
You're right. Selling yourself short, man. You're crushing this. Let's do two more of these.
Okay. This is actually kind of fun. I actually don't know this song so far. Check it out. Ooh, that dress so scandalous. Oh, there it is. Cisco. I'm going to say 99 just because I know.
Fuck. Yeah, you're right.
Because that's where he would be.
So I think the single was released in 2000, but the album with the song on it was released in 99, so I think you have to call it a 99 song.
Man, Cisco. That's dark times.
I'm going to do one last one.
Trying to think where I was when I was a kid when I heard this song. I took her out. It was a Friday night. I woke alone. I'm gonna say 2000.
99.
Because this is, this is on. Oh, what was that?
Enema of the State.
Oh, shit. I was. Got the song messed up. This one's like a few all songs the same to me.
All right. Well, I don't know how many you got right because I wasn't keeping score.
Yeah, it's a drinking game. It's like who's lining anymore.
And also, I've been giving away as prizes copies of the game Drinking Buddies, which you already have.
Oh,
so,
oh shit. Cool. I'll take another one.
Yeah, I'm sure you won. I feel like I was drinking a lot more than you were.
Yeah, I agree. I was guessing right.
All right, well then, I think we are through all of our formal segments. Do you have anything you want to plug for yourself? Anything you want to call out?
Nope.
Any final thoughts on the 90s?
Final thoughts on the 90s. I'm glad they're over. I'm glad that some of the sounds and nostalgia of the 80s are coming back. That's my favorite era. EDM's a big thing for me nowadays because it has all those future sounds and stuff. That's about it.
I've been saying I need to have you and Mike, our friend Mike Byram, on together to talk about EDM, and I can interview you and you can tell me why.
Oh, there's so many bands that you'll actually like.
I believe it. It's just there's only so much time in the day.
Agreed. I'd be definitely down for that.
All right. Well, I'll just briefly plug our website, wasted-minds.com. We mentioned Drinking Buddies. It's a strategic drinking game that we've been developing over the past couple of years. We're looking to launch our Kickstarter campaign early next year. So if you go to wasted-minds.com/Kickstarter, you can sign up for our mailing list. We'll keep you in the loop on all the happenings with the project and let you know as soon as the campaign goes live. So appreciate that. Give us a like or a comment on iTunes. That's always good. And I guess that's everything for me. So thanks for listening. And to everybody at home, here's to you.